Gerald Black, at his own request, was supervising the mushrooming wooden partitions that were springing up in a bellying circle on the vaulted third floor of Radiation Building 2. The laborers worked, in the main, silently, but more than one was openly a wonder at the 63 photocells that required installation. One of them sat down near Black, removed his hat, and wiped his forehead thoughtfully with a freckled forearm. Black nodded at him. "How's it doing, Walensky?" Walensky shrugged and fired a cigar. "Smooth as butter. What's going on anyway, Doc? First, there's no work for 3 days, and then we have this mess of jiggers." He leaned backward on his elbows and puffed smoke. Black twitched his eyebrows. "A couple of robot men came over from Earth. Remember the trouble we had with robots running into the gamma fields before we pounded it into their skulls that they weren't to do it? Yeah. Didn't we get new robots? We got some replacements, but mostly it was a job of indoctrination. Anyway, the people who make them want to figure out robots that aren't hit so bad by gamma rays. Sure seems funny, though, to stop all the work on the drive for this robot deal. I thought nothing was allowed to stop the drive. Well, it's the fellows upstairs that have the say on that. Me, I just do as I'm told. Probably all a matter of pull." "Yeah." The electrician jerked a smile and winked a wise eye. "Somebody knew somebody in Washington. But as long as my pay comes through on the dot, I should worry. The drive's none of my affair. What are they going to do here?" "You're asking me? They brought a mess of robots with them, over 60, and they're going to measure reactions. That's all my knowledge."
"How long will it take?"
"I wish I knew." "Well," Walensky said with heavy sarcasm, "as long as they dish me my money, they can play games all they want." Black felt quietly satisfied. Let the story spread. It was harmless, and near enough to the truth to take the fangs out of curiosity. A man sat in the chair, motionless, silent. A weight dropped, crashed downward, then pounded aside at the last moment under the synchronized thump of a sudden force beam. In 63 wooden cells, watching NS2 robots dashed forward in that split second before the weight veered, and 63 photocells, 5 feet ahead of their original positions, jiggled the marking pen and presented a little jag on the paper. The weight rose and dropped, rose and dropped, rose 10 times. 10 times the robot sprang forward and stopped as the man remained safely seated. Major General Colner had not worn his uniform in its entirety since the first dinner with the U.S. robot representatives. He wore nothing over his blue-gray shirt now. The collar was open and the black tie was pulled loose. He looked hopefully at Bogart, who was still blandly neat and whose inner tension was perhaps betrayed only by the trace of glister at his temples. The general said, "How does it look? What is it you're trying to see?" Bogart replied, "A difference which may turn out to be a little too subtle for our purposes, I'm afraid. For 62 of those robots, the necessity of jumping toward the apparently threatened human was what we call in robotics a forced reaction. You see, even when the robots knew that the human in question would not come to harm, and after the third or fourth time they must have known it, they could not prevent reacting as they did. First law requires it." "Well?" "But the 63rd robot, the modified Nestor, had no such compulsion. He was under free action. If he had wished, he could have remained in his seat. Unfortunately," he said, his voice was mildly regretful, "he didn't so wish."
"Why do you suppose?"
Bogart shrugged. "I suppose Dr. Calvin will tell us when she gets here. Probably with a horribly pessimistic interpretation, too. She is sometimes a bit annoying."
"She's qualified, isn't she?" demanded the general with a sudden frown of uneasiness.
"Yes." Bogart seemed amused. "She's qualified, all right. She understands robots like a sister. Comes from hating human beings so much, I think. It's just that, psychologist or not, she's an extreme neurotic.
has paranoid tendencies. Don't take her too seriously.
He spread the long row of broken line graphs out in front of him.
You see, General, in the case of each robot, the time interval from moment of drop to the completion of a 5-foot movement tends to decrease as the tests are repeated. There's a definite mathematical relationship that governs such things, and failure to conform would indicate marked abnormality in the positronic brain. Unfortunately, all here appear normal.
But if our Nestor 10 was not responding with a forced action, why isn't his curve different?
I don't understand that.
It's simple enough. Robotic responses are not perfectly analogous to human responses, more's the pity. In human beings, voluntary action is much slower than reflex action. But that's not the case with robots. With them, it is merely a question of freedom of choice. Otherwise, the speeds of free and forced action are much the same. What I had been expecting, though, was that Nestor 10 would be caught by surprise the first time and allow too great an interval to elapse before responding.
And he didn't?
I'm afraid not.
Then we haven't gotten anywhere.
The General sat back with an expression of pain.
It's 5 days since you've come.
At this point, Susan Calvin entered and slammed the door behind her.
Put your graphs away, Peter, she cried. You know they don't show anything.
She mumbled something impatiently as Kallner half rose to greet her and went on.
We'll have to try something else quickly. I don't like what's happening.
Bogart exchanged a resigned glance with the General.
Is anything wrong?
You mean specifically? No.
But I don't like to have Nestor 10 continue to elude us.
It's bad.
It must be gratifying, his swollen sense of superiority. I'm afraid that his motivation is no longer simply one of following orders. I think it's becoming more a matter of sheer neurotic necessity to outthink humans. That's a dangerously unhealthy situation.